Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, formerly known as Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, this week's show, we'll be talking about some extreme adventures with Bill Barkley, who is both blind and deaf.
Join us as we talk with Bill about climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, running the Boston Marathon, and leading groups of deaf and or blind teenagers through the Amazon. Technology helps, but his successes are mostly due to his can-do attitude. And the technology is what we'll be talking about towards the end of this show. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip is the tagline on Bill Barkley's website.
What's within you is stronger than what is in your way.
That can apply to so many people and with so many barriers.
Disabled or not, I mean, even if caregiver or a spouse or a friend or the person who has a challenge of some kind, that's what is really, the mindset is really that, you know, a lot of life has to do with how each of us decide to deal with life. And sometimes the biggest obstacle to getting anywhere in your life is somebody called yourself. But you can get around things if you really put your mind to it.
And often it really does come down to internal self-motivation. If you're driven to do something and you have the encouragement to do it, you can usually find a way to do what you want to do.
And you might not do it the same way everybody else does it, but if you look hard enough and try hard enough, you can often find a way to make things happen that you want to have happen.
So as Bill says, if you have a dream, look inside of yourself.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Bill Barkley. Can you start by introducing yourself?
Yeah, I'm Bill Barkley, deafblind adventurer and storyteller.
You said you're deaf and blind. Can you describe the cause of that?
Yeah, I have Usher's syndrome. So I'm one of 15 to 20,000 in the U.S. and 100,000 people in the world. It's a condition that causes deafness, in my case, before the age of 5, early childhood. And then later in your teenage and young adult years, you start to progressively lose your vision. The visual component, a lot of people know in the low vision or blindness community, is retinitis pigmentosa, which basically is severe tunnel vision. And I also have cataracts as well. It's a progressive condition, and there are no treatments or cures currently for Usher syndrome.
So we're conducting this interview via Skype. And people are going to wonder, if you can't hear and you can't see, how are you understanding our questions?
Well, you know, with the assistive technologies today, there's a lot of great options that are out there. So I do extremely well with hearing aid technology in both ears. And then also now with the audio Bluetooth outputs, I can basically get a direct digital signal into my hearing aids. So while I do have a severe loss, I also have a very good, what they call discrimination score. In other words, if I do hear it, I hear it well and clear. So I don't have a muddled hearing system. So I have an 85% loss in the low tones and 100% in the high tones. The technology bridges the gap significantly. And then since I have severe tunnel vision, I do have a pinhole of vision straight ahead. So you know, I just magnify and scan in order to take in visual information. So I have light perception and I can read things that have to be, you know, quite large.
So you'll use a CCTV or some kind of equivalent device?
No, I don't, not yet. Although I have used those in some situations. You know, again, a lot of the assistive technology stuff, the Apple stuff is nice because I can change a lot of stuff on the fly. And so I can make it bigger or smaller, or I can have it read to me very easily.
You had substantially more vision as a child, I take it. Did you ever learn Braille?
No, because I had no idea that I was even going blind. I didn't know that I had been losing my vision until I was 27 years old. I'm 50 now. But I had a series of 3 car accidents all at sunset. Then it took about a year to figure out why I was having these car accidents, and then I found out that I was going blind. So in my particular case, I pretty much went to age 27 thinking that I was a deaf person and was living the life of a deaf person, and then found out that I was going blind.
So your speech is excellent. Do you use any sign?
No, I don't use sign. I was taught to read lips, and as a result, that is the primary way that I pretty much learned to compensate for the hearing loss.
But as we'll see, these challenges haven't stopped Bill from doing some incredible things.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is how a person who's both deaf and blind can engage in extreme outdoor adventures. Can you talk about some of your outdoor adventures?
Basically, I call them epic adventures, if you will. They're how can I do a unique adventure that is a conversation starter that allows us to get awareness and education and information out about what people can do with their physical challenges, but then also what are some of the technologies that are available to them, and kind of encourage people to, you know, pursue a life without limits, if you will, within the constraints that you might have. So the first one was Kilimanjaro, which was really about showing hearing and vision technology, and it's possible to set a goal for yourself and then build a team and have the technology to go and try and do something. So the big game changer for the assisted pieces I talked about with the hearing stuff was traditionally people with hearing loss did not do a lot of exercising because of the sweat and perspiration. Moisture is the enemy for hearing technology, and so they typically didn't do it. But now that's all changing because of water resistance, new materials, and then also the Bluetooth technology allowed you to not have to deal with things like headphones. So the Kilimanjaro was the first piece, but then after that, I went to Hear the World, which is one of the world's largest hearing foundations, who had helped me with the Kilimanjaro project, and I said I'd like to focus on building the next generation, kids that would be comfortable with their hearing and vision loss, and then have them advocate for themselves and then start to drive education and awareness. So from there, I launched the Hear the World Expeditions, where I got them to help support taking groups of deaf teenagers to the Amazon and then to the Grand Canyon. And then the kids raised the money, and then they did service projects all around the U.S. after they came back, talking about their experience of being with other kids who had the same challenges that they have. And we also have another program, which we call Leading the Way, which is part of what we call Global Explorers, which is all blind youth. We take them to Machu Picchu and Grand Canyon as well. But the idea about embracing your challenges and building a life, you know, in the context of your barriers, and then meeting, you know, other kids like you along the way. So that was kind of like the next phase of the adventure was like, you know, okay, let's, you know, help other people who have like helped me. And then there have been some other adventures along the way, but the last big one this year was the Boston Marathon, which was really about getting a message out to help raise money for hearing and vision loss. I go to Harvard Math Eye and Ear for over 20 years, and so it was to be the first deafblind person to do the Boston Marathon with ushers. And it was my first marathon, and it was cool because we were able to get 50 other people involved to run on a team together. And then we ended up raising about $400,000 for research into hearing and vision loss. And so what generally comes out of those are these stories that the media or other folks pick up on locally, regional, national, international. And then we start to talk about how we get it done. How did you run and prepare for the marathon? And how did you get ready for the Amazon? And, you know, what's it like for a kid who can't see to hear the Grand Canyon and hear the rush of the water, those types of things.
That must be an incredible experience for the teenagers to be exposed to things that are so different from what they're used to.
I took a group of deaf kids to the Amazon, and then we came across deaf kids in the Amazon. And let me tell you, it's not a pretty picture for deaf kids in the Amazon. The girls are forced into prostitution. They're not covered under the Constitution for an education being guaranteed. And their families reject them. There's no medical technology or even a hearing doctor or insurance for them. You know, it's a totally different life path. So, you know, when a deaf kid from the U.S. who may be feeling, you know, challenges about their own life suddenly finds himself in the middle of the Amazon with a deaf kid and saying, I could be living here deaf, or I could be living at home deaf. It's two different pictures. It's very powerful.
Do you use a sighted guide on any of these hiking and running adventures?
Yeah, I do. It definitely, yeah, a good group of people that help navigate. Like on the expeditions with the kids, we give them that job. You know, it's a powerful thing to have them be your guide, and that helps quite a bit there. The Boston Marathon, it was my 50th birthday, so I had a little dream, and that was to have my three sons cross the finish line with me. So they were my three official pace runners, which were allowed to break up segments of the race and run with me. And then all three of them finished the finish line with me at the Boston. So that was sort of a powerful, really cool experience for me.
Oh, what fun. So how do you run with them?
I run a few paces behind. I'm behind them a couple of steps. They're over, say, like at 2 o'clock. And then they're basically keeping the crowd, you know, at bay, if you will, or keeping me from obstacles. Then what I do is on the left-hand side of the road where the gutter meets the asphalt, that's my unofficial line that I follow, that I have enough that I can see that patch as we go. So I just kind of stare at that as look down as I go. And I just know that if I go over the line, it's going to be a gutter, or it's going to be something I don't want to be in. But to the right of that, I'm relatively safe. Because people tend to stay to the far right on the road or in the middle, but not as many people on the far left.
Well, that sounds similar to how I used to run when I had a little bit more vision. I had enough sight to be able to follow maybe one of the dotted lines in the road. And if my buddy ran a few feet in front of me with a bright shirt, I could see enough of the shirt there.
Right, yeah.
Nancy and I hike a lot, but, you know, we're married. We've been around forever. We have our own cues and ways of doing things. I use a lecky in one hand and maybe put a hand on her shoulder. I'm wondering what are the hints or ways people have of doing these things?
I use both the leckies on both hands so that I can get the sun to grade on both sides. You know, how wide is the trail, that type of thing. How steep is it from one place to another? Another big one is actually small bells, you know, similar to the bells that you see for like Christmas, you know, those little brass bells. Put that bell and attach it to the back of a backpack. And so as the person in front of you, you'll always hear that little ringing sound of the bell. Some people put it on poles as well of a person that's in front of them. So the auditory cues are a good one. Like you said, sometimes using the hand on the shoulder. Everything has a positive and sometimes has a negative. It just depends on a system that works with you and your buddy. Because some people would say, you know, it's hard to hold on to someone else, especially in rocky, scrabbly condition. It's easier to fall, both of you fall. And a rope and those things can kind of get in the way. So, but then in other situations, it provides more stability and support. And it's something that people like in their system. So, you know, obviously roping each other is another technique that people do as well. A lot of auditory commands. I know that, you know, my expedition guide, you know, would do, we're going to go 3 steps right or 5 steps up, or we got a little ridge we're going to work through, and then playing the auditory command back and, you know, that you've heard them and understand, you know, what's going on. So that's also another kind of a strategy that people use as well.
So like Pete said, we usually hike together and he's almost totally blind and I'm fully sighted, and we've developed this lexicon over the years. So if I say something, he knows what it means. But you apparently, when you're going in different parts of the world, you've got a different guide. Do you need to train with them to teach them what to say to you for being most effective, or you just wing it?
We wing it. I don't know if that's always good or bad, but yeah, that's part of the process. I think it, you know, sometimes, especially some people's comfort level with that varies all over the map. In other words, when you ask another person to do that, some handle that really well and some get really stressed out by that.
Right. Yes. Yeah. It's a big responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm aware of that. You know, you try and make them feel comfortable about that. But generally speaking, a lot of it has to do with the planning and the preparation beforehand, that the systems are in place and we know what works. So, you know, it's like anything, just before you set out on a trail, it's just spending a few minutes before you get underway talking about the different things you might encounter, how they can help or you can be of help to them. So I try to try and minimize their discomfort as much as possible. And then, you know, if something happens, something happens, but make light of it, you know, so they don't get too stressed out about it.
So you're pretty intrepid and have been on all kinds of excursions throughout the world. You must have gotten yourself in positions where you say, boy, I don't want to go there, or in some kind of trouble. Can you talk about some of that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think that summit night on Kilimanjaro, you know, after 4 days of getting up there, altitude sickness, and the last day, and we got to go, start at 1 a.m. in the complete dark at 15 below zero and 20 mile an hour winds, and I can't see anything.
That doesn't sound like fun whether or not you can see.
Well, and then the wind not helping because I can't hear as well with the wind blowing. So, you know, there are those moments where you're just kind of like, okay. But if you have good people around you, and then you just kind of like, instead of looking at it as 17 hours, just kind of like, okay, well, let's just take a couple steps and let's just take it one step at a time and keep going. You kind of work your way through it. Because at that point, I had figured the goal for me was if I could get to the top, I'd see the most incredible sunrise ever before I lost my vision completely. And so it was like, I'm this close. Let's just keep pushing through the part that's the most difficult and just try not to be overwhelmed by it.
We had a blind hiker named Carl Ritter on this show earlier in number 1244, where he talked about hiking the Appalachian Trail. And we asked him what was in his first aid kit, and he said he carries super glue and duct tape. What's in your first aid kit?
Wow, that's interesting. It's interesting. I don't worry about that too much because, you know, I'm part of an expedition, so I usually have somebody like, you know, who's a trained EMT kind of thing. But a lot of my stuff is about being a battery-powered person, obviously with a lot of hearing technology and with the night vision technology. So I'm big into waterproof, moisture-proof, anti-fog wipes, all those things that keep my assistive technology things functioning and moving. Because I figure, you know, if I lose the aid completely, my hearing system's shot. If I lose some of the visual stuff, I'm just going to have to rely all the more just purely on the poles or tactile. So I figure my edge is the assistive technology, and it's bridging the gap. So my whole first aid kit is about, for example, on power. I used a solar power pack on the back of my backpack to capture the power during the day. And then when I get into my tent at night, download the power from the solar pack into my microphone so that it works the next day. So I call that my first aid kit.
Oh, that's interesting. That's very different.
Yeah. I think if I start bleeding, somebody will know what to do.
Probably.
Can you talk about the No Barriers organization?
Eric and I do work for No Barriers. We're on the board of a nonprofit called No Barriers USA. And our mission is that anybody with any disability, any background, any age, can get past the mountains in their life, whether they're physical, mental, what have you. And they can lead an active and adventurous lifestyle. So we provide programming for returning back from Iraq and Afghanistan. We also provide the programming I talked about through Global Explorers, where we took over 800 kids last year on adventure trips around the world. And then the last piece is the No Barriers Summit, which is in Colorado every 2 years. Next one's in Telluride next summer in August. And we have a series of 35 outdoor adventure clinics where if you're in a wheelchair, we can teach you how to rock climb. If you're missing a limb, we can show you how to golf. If you don't have arms, but you want to do kayaking or do canoeing, we have the pedal and adaptive equipment and people who can help you figure all that stuff out. So our mission is really about helping anybody with any challenges to develop a mindset of getting around it and then continue to live their life.
In case any of our listeners are interested in trying out some of that, can you give the contact information for those organizations as well as your own website?
Mine is billbarkley.com. So it's BILLBARKELEY.com. The other one is No Barriers USA. And that's www.nobarriersusa.org. And if you go to that website, you can find out about the Soldiers to the Summit program. And then you'll find about the Global Explorers program, which I talked about with kids of all abilities, normal or physically challenged, can go on different adventures and destinations around the world. And then the third area we just talked about with the Telluride Summit, it takes place the second weekend in August. And so we're looking forward to having some wonderful people there.
So we have listeners in over 80 countries around the world. That No Barriers USA isn't limited to United States citizens, is it?
No, it isn't. It's just the name that we had originally. Actually, we've done a couple of them in Italy. And we have a lot of interest in doing this type of a format well beyond Colorado. A lot of our attendees come from around the world to Colorado, because Colorado is obviously, as you know, because you're hikers, the destination that people do like to go to for adventures and things. We keep the cost very minimal because people with physical challenges tend to not necessarily have a lot of money or the whole family to travel together. So the programming is very affordable.
Before you got involved in No Barriers, did you have a previous career?
Yeah, up until 3 years ago, I actually was a Fortune 500 company. I was the director of sales and marketing for them. For 25 years, I had a career in corporate America. I covered US, Canada, Mexico sales organization for the company. And that was one of my things after doing Kilimanjaro, was that this is my second career, which is really helping other people and serving other people as they work through the challenges in their life, because a lot of people have helped me. And one of the big things driving that was is that I felt pretty lucky that I had gotten so far into a Fortune 500 company. The reality is 80% of deaf people in America are unemployed, and the blind unemployment rate is not much better. So I had really felt, you know, a calling to, if we could help people get inspired and to keep pushing, that we can kind of nudge people's societal expectations a little bit forward and help people realize that there's a lot people can do, even within the context of the challenges that people either perceive they have or that they really do have.
Now for this week's high-tech item, the assistive technologies that enable Bill to do what he does.
So Bill, you talked a little bit about some of the assistive technologies that you use on some of these adventures. Can you talk a little bit more specifically about what helps you on some of these ventures?
Well, that's why I do the adventures. The adventures are really all about the assistive technology. It was I have the same passion, which was that most people didn't know the technology existed. My parents didn't know they existed or were available. Doctors aren't aware that these things are available. Insurance companies don't cover the cost of a lot of these types of things. And so there were just a whole bunch of issues that were there. So my first one for Kilimanjaro was about showing how if you were deaf, you could use digital hearing aids. You could use a wireless microphone system powered by Bluetooth. And then I took the world's smallest fiber optic microphone, which weighed less than an ounce, and we used that and gave that to my expedition guide to get up the mountain. So that the idea was is that as long as I was within 125 feet of him, I could climb the mountain of my own free will without ropes and bells, which were the typical way that a person with physical challenges would probably tackle a climb like Kilimanjaro. So the idea was is that is it possible to bridge that gap and use these technologies to do something different? So on the hearing side, it was really about showing how hearing systems with microphones, hearing aids, and Bluetooth were changing the game. So I could start to listen to music from the iPod for the first time, you know, wirelessly with Bluetooth and train and get ready for the climb. So that was all a big major focus. And then the other part of it was the night vision technology, was because I was legally blind, that I could get a prescription for night vision technology. And by mounting that on my head, I could use the night vision technology to find the feet of the expedition guide in front of me. And so that when we were summiting at night, I knew where to go by following the footsteps of the person in front of me. Typically, you would just use poles and just navigate your way up through the dark. But in the darkness, I have completely no vision. During the daytime, I have a little, but at nighttime, I'm rendered pretty much completely blind. So the technologies, though, nobody realizes necessarily that they're there and they were available. And so that what I did is my first set of adventures was to start getting the word out.
You said you needed a prescription for the night vision technology. Is that because it's usually limited to military applications or what?
Yeah, that's the reason why.
So that's interesting. Anybody who's got severe difficulty seeing at night can get a prescription for the night vision goggles?
Yeah, correct.
Cool. I gather they're expensive.
Yes, they are. Although, like anything in life, you know, I mean, that was 5 years ago, and at the time, night vision technology was an earlier generation type of thing. And as each year goes by, it does become cheaper and cheaper. And there are night vision technologies that are available that hunters and other people use, but they're not the same strength, if you will. But it's possible to use them.
So how did you start using some of these technologies? How did you become aware of these?
Well, after wearing hearing aid for 40 years, I've always just been one of those people that's always kind of pushed the limit on what it could be used for. And then the vision stuff has been more acquired over time as I have dealt with that later in life. But it's just really more a matter of as you progressively lose more and more function, both hearing and vision, you just start experimenting and piloting and kind of prototyping some stuff. So that for me was kind of the fun part, to be able to see, you know, well, maybe if we used it this way, that maybe something different could be done.
Yeah, you're obviously one of those people that are pretty receptive to new ideas and willing to try something new. That's real important, I guess.
Yeah.
So you've been talking about some adventures you've been on that very few people do at all, whether or not they can see or hear. I have to ask you, why do you do these extreme adventures?
Most people would say, deafblind, climb Kilimanjaro, you must be crazy. I mean, they just thought, you know, that it was really, you know, about a testosterone-inducing kind of midlife crisis thing.
Yeah, we have a friend who's going up there for exactly that reason in a couple months.
For me, that wasn't it. It was really about, I like to challenge myself. I like new heights, new skills, new experiences. I like to travel. I like setting a bold goal for myself. I believe that I'll get there. I'm just not going to do it the same way as you. I'm not crazy. I'll do the work and I'll do it differently, but there's really no reason why I shouldn't be able to do those things if I want to.
And you must have an understanding spouse to send you up Kilimanjaro.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Did she go with you?
No, she didn't. No.
So if you're interested in challenging yourself in some of the ways that Bill was just talking about, challenging himself, we will have all of the links that he mentioned on our website at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
Just look in the show notes, and we'll also have a link to the show we did with Carl Ritter, who was blind and hiked the Appalachian Trail alone.
In case you haven't heard that show, the Appalachian Trail is over 2,000 miles long, and he actually did the first 500 miles alone, so that was quite an adventure as well. That's it for show number 1309. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about ham radio technology with Kelvin Marsh, otherwise known as M0AID, about the technology behind ham radio and how accessible it is. He's a blind amateur radio operator who reviews equipment for accessibility and maintains the Active Elements website, which contains not only those reviews, but a lot of other useful information for hams with disabilities. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, formerly known as Viewpoints, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook at Eyes on Success and on Twitter at @EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.